south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, you know, here in The Expat Files, I rarely talk about sports, except to cut up on people who are obsessed about it. And what I've noticed down here is when gringos and long-term expats are obsessed with sports, they tend to hang around the TV a lot and, well, drink. And you know, down here in Latin America, the average male is obsessed about his soccer. Latin males, that is. But when speaking about gringos and expats down here, as far as soccer, well, they just don't get too thrilled about it. Though I admit many of them come down carrying a torch for the old home team, whether it's the Chicago Bulls, Cubs, or the Packers, Knicks, whatever. Old habits die hard. But today, I'm not going to talk about the Latin male obsession with soccer or what they call football. I'm going to talk about a high-end sport here that's pretty much only for rich folks. One that's never really caught on with the middle classes down here because, well, they just can't afford it. And they never will. I'm talking about golf. Now, before you change your dial because you think this will be of limited interest to you, there are some great lessons to be learned from what I'm going to tell you right now concerning golf here in Latin America. First of all, let me point out that since I was about 6 years old, I was an avid golfer because I lived only two blocks from a public golf course. And back then, at 25 cents a round for kids under 12, yes, and I did say 25 cents a round, but of course for nine holes, which they kicked up to, I think, 35 cents when I was about 10. Anyway, my parents considered it a great alternative to any other kind of trouble I might get into as a youngster during this summer vacation time, so they just kicked me out the door, gave me a quarter, and said, "Get out of my hair, go bother someone at the golf course." And I did. Now, naturally, if you live pretty much right next to a cheap golf course and you had the chance to do it every day, after a while, even if you're all thumbs, you get pretty good at it. Oh, and by the way, my sister worked in the clubhouse, so I rarely even had to pay that quarter, and I'd get a free hot dog and an ice cream out of it, too. Thanks, of course, to the goodness of the Chicago taxpayers who subsidized those public golf courses. And as for Mayor Daley, that sociopathic jerk, I think that was the only good thing he ever did for us Chicagoland kids. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, according to that 10,000-hour rule, you know what I'm talking about, anyone that puts 10,000 hours or so into anything that he or she does is going to be in the top 1 percentile, whether it's golfing, writing, playing the piano, or lying to your constituency or robbing banks. Now, the way I figure it, by the time I was maybe 16, I got 4,000 or 5,000 hours in, which is a good start. But not enough, I found out later, to make a career out of it. Anyway, as you can imagine, me and my little buddies who lived around that public golf course got pretty good at it. And some of us, including me, started winning some tournaments in and around Chicago. Sometimes even getting our names and pictures in the paper, holding our little trophies. That said, all of us kids up north who were into golfing had that great advantage of having cheap public golf courses. And believe me, at 25 or 35 cents for the green fee, those courses were always crowded. Balls to the wall, in fact. But that never stopped me or my buddies from getting on because, remember, I had pull. My sister worked there. Anyway, without those dirt-cheap public courses, American middle-class kids in the United States would have never learned the game of golf. It never would have caught on because whose parents could ever afford a private country club, much less the cost of a set of new clubs for a kid? In fact, I remember going through the Sears and the Monkey Ward's catalogs and seeing kids' clubs for something like $39 or so, which I think I got for Christmas one year, but only after renting clubs for a couple of years. Now, I don't know if you knew this or not, but those public courses in the States would rent clubs to kids for, like, I think it was a dime. Now, of course, they were always beat up and pretty terrible, but they were clubs. And often kids would bring an empty bag and rent one set of clubs and split them, so a nickel apiece would get you a set of clubs, or a half a set. Now, note, down here in Latin America, there are no such things as public golf courses. They're all strictly private and expensive, for the locals, that is, but for us gringos, a very, very good deal, and I'll tell you why in a second. Now, note, down here, there aren't many golf courses because only the very wealthy down here can afford memberships. That isn't to say there are no golf courses. Any city of 100,000 or so usually has one or two within easy driving distance. And near any city of a million or two, you'll find 3 to 5 golf courses, more, of course, with higher populations. Now note, in Latin America, there are more than 50 cities that technically have a population of a million or more. And if you really want to get precise, there's more than 100 cities with over a million if you count the nearby outlying areas. That said, as you're traveling around down here, you're going to run into golf courses. To be specific, in South America, right now there are around 718 hole golf courses. All, like I said before, private. And you know, Colombia alone has over 60 18-hole golf courses. To the non-golfer, that might seem like a lot, but remember, in the United States, there are over 11,000 public golf courses alone versus zero public golf courses in Latin America. And note, there are about 4,000 private golf courses in the States versus around 1,000 total courses, which are all private, in Central and South America. So, even though Latin America has around 500 million people, about a third more than the U.S. population, the U.S. has 15 times as many golf courses. Now, the fact is, when I was a teenage kid, I was kind of on the local Chicago golf circuit myself. Eventually, I got burnt out on it. Then, when I finally came down here to Latin America for good, I sold my clubs up north and didn't even bring any down. So, I've been down here in Latin America 25 years or something like that and didn't miss it. Now, a few years back, it just so happened that one of my very rich gringo friends, a buddy of mine from the old Chicago days, now living in Costa Rica, called me up and said, "Come on down. I just joined the Costa Rica Country Club." And I think back then at the time, he told me that the membership was around $20,000, which meant you owned a share of the club, and if you wanted to get out, you could just sell that share to anyone. And at that time, there were only 3 golf courses in Costa Rica, and this was by far the most deluxe. So, like up in the U.S., they either sell shares or you have to buy property on the golf course itself, because some courses also own upscale housing developments. So, you buy one of those and you're automatically a member. In fact, often you'll see shares like that for sale in the classified ads in the local newspapers, which can only mean some supposed rich guy is down on his luck now and has to sell out. Now, let me tell you, if you think that belonging to an exclusive country club in the States is a big deal, you know, a self-esteem booster and coolness factor, bragging rights, all that, you ain't seen nothing yet. You come down here to Latin America, and I'm telling you, these country clubs are just filled with that country's hoi polloi and the movers and shakers, which includes all those disgusting, pretentious jerks with the bulletproof SUVs and bodyguards that I always make fun of on this show. You know, the stinking rich so-called criollos with their generations of inherited wealth. And of course, the sociopathic, lying, thieving politicians that have bribed or stolen their way to the top. That's the country club crowd down here. And of course, let's not forget their wives, kids, and mistresses. So that's who's hanging around the country club. Now, of course, if you're the odd gringo who likes golf and you come down here to live, you'll want to join a club like that because, hell, that's your sport. And if and when you do join up, you'll find it's not just about golfing. If you let yourself, you'll be sucked into a very exclusive social circle. And it's hard not to be, because those are the guys you're going to be setting up foursomes with. Soon enough, you'll find you're on a first-name basis with generals and vice presidents and ambassadors and all the big-time crooks. Now, this might crack you up. Expat Eddie, who belongs to a country club in Salvador, because he's long been a hacker too, he says sometimes at night when he's sitting home watching the 10 o'clock news, he'll recognize some of the guys that are being indicted or hauled away in cuffs. They're guys from his golf club who he's played a few rounds with. Now, I've been told by a reliable source who works at one of these clubs. In fact, at that time, he was the guy who ran the pro shop at the Costa Rican Country Club. He told me that more than half the people that have memberships never golf at all. However, they all have personal lockers and a couple of pairs of $300 golf shoes and a couple of sets of $3,000 clubs that rarely get used, but the locker boys keep polishing and buffing them just in case. And some of the members, he said, had expensive golf carts that only were used to haul the member from the parking lot to the bar or restaurant. And at first I thought the pro shop guy was blowing hot air because you don't drop $20,000 for a membership and buy all that equipment and never golf. Then again, being a member allows you to have weddings and bar mitzvahs and stuff, and you can hang out in the restaurant and the bar, and your kids can swim in the pool, etc. But, you know, down here it's all about the fact you can afford the membership and the so-called prestige that goes along with it. Okay, fair enough, you might say they have money, so why shouldn't they join? And why do they have to golf? They can just kind of hang out. I suppose there's enough of that going on in country clubs up in the States, too. But here's where it gets interesting. My gringo friend who bought that membership at the Costa Rica club had almost no one he could partner up with, at least not on the weekdays. He said, look, you can go out there on almost any day of the week and shoot off a shotgun and not hit anyone. Though they had a full roster of members, that's how desolate and unused the place was. So anyway, oftentimes my gringo friend Larry had to shoot all by himself, and that's no fun. And many times he resorted to going out and trying to shoot 18 with the pro shop guy because there just was no one around. Then he brought his wife out with him a couple of times, which seemed to attract the attention of the few people that were at the place. It's such a macho society that it even extends to the golf course where guys will rarely shoot golf with women. In fact, back then anyway, that country club had specific days that the women could shoot. Yeah, that'd go down well in the States, wouldn't it? Talk about a macho society, huh? And when my buddy Larry told me about the golf scene down in Latin America, because he has hit quite a few courses, being that he was always a bit obsessed about the game himself, he said the people he'd see occasionally at the golf course were the spoiled rich kids of the guys that own the memberships. And he said he just does not like shooting with those pretentious little jerks. Though, like he said, they're not all jerks. Some of them are pretty nice kids. However, he said even with the nicest guys, their classism really gets on your nerves after a while. He says it's annoying the way they treat the greenskeepers and the maintenance people, the same way people down here treat their cleaning ladies and maintenance guys. As if they don't even exist. All right, I'm sure you knew that already, but here's the point. Being that my buddy was basically starved for partners to play with, and he could rarely put together a foursome with any Latins, not to mention gringos that he knew, so he started calling me and asking me to come out. A couple of times I did. And since they were weekdays, like he said, the course was practically empty. So the first two times I went out with him alone, and the third time was on a Saturday. So, being the weekend, there actually were people on the golf course, and he managed to wangle together a foursome with two wealthy Latin guys. Not the kids of those wealthy guys, but the actual membership holders. And being that we were gringos, and the only gringos on the course that day, I might add, which at the time wasn't so very strange, even though there were a lot of gringos in Costa Rica, because not too many could fork out the 20 grand membership for the golf. Not to mention, at that time, with the new gringo influx, there were three other courses under construction, and gringos were waiting, hoping that much competition would bring the membership and initiation prices down, which they didn't. Back then, most of the gringos weren't actually living full-time in Costa Rica. They were just tourists and buying plots of land, etc. So anyway, during that Saturday morning foursome, I happened to catch both of those guys cheating. No, not my buddy Larry. He was a righteous guy. I'm talking about those two wealthy, high-rolling Latin movers and shakers. And they did it so blatantly, I couldn't believe it. They'd kick the ball to get a better lie. They'd pull the ball out of the brush and say, winner rules. I caught one guy actually teeing his ball up in the fairway. And one of those guys, when he hit his ball way into the rough, he walked in only about 3 feet into the deep grass, and suddenly he was hitting his ball. And I saw him hit that ball that was at least a block away deep in the woods. Then I watched the other guy kick his ball when he thought no one was looking from behind a tree to get a better lie and a straight shot at the green. So both these guys were writing fives on their scorecards instead of sevens and threes instead of fours. I felt like I was shooting golf with the Three Stooges. I mean, two Stooges. Now, of course, I just met these guys, so I didn't say anything, but I said a few words to my friend, all right? You know what he said to me later? He said, Johnny, they all cheat. I've been out with a lot of these guys here and there because, hell, I have to go out with somebody and I do partner up sometimes and they're all a bunch of frickin' cheaters. And that's why he said I wouldn't trust these guys in a business deal for 2 seconds. As Larry put it, you cheat in golf, you cheat in life. Then another time about a month later, we went out with a couple of different guys and, again, they cheated their asses off. In fact, get this. Even before we teed off, Larry said, the guy in the blue pants is the former Minister of Defense. You just watch. He'll cheat his ass off. Then he added, but do me a favor, Johnny. Don't call him on it. So it was a very beautiful golf course and highly underused. But with jerks like that as members, it was just hard to take the whole thing seriously. Oh, and do note that just like golf courses in the States, at all these Latin golf courses, they have a big bulletin board, usually in the clubhouse or in the bar, listing the latest and greatest achievements and the team wins and who got a hole-in-one this month, the guys who shot or hit under par, the guys with eagles and multiple birdies and tournament winners. Basically, it's the liar's corner. So, needless to say, that was the last time I ever played a round of golf in Costa Rica. Now, flash forward about 3 or 4 months later, I was still in Costa Rica. Well, it turns out one day over my morning coffee, while looking through the local San Jose newspaper, while flicking through the sports pages, which I rarely do these days, I noticed the happy, smiling mug of one of those guys I shot golf with. One of the guys who cheated his ass off. And he was looking so proud, holding a giant trophy that he'd just won in a tournament. Which didn't make me so much as want to vomit, but made me want to call the newspaper to say this guy's a cheating dickhead. But Costa Rica wasn't my only bad golfing experience. I also had a bad experience in Panama, where I got thrown in with a Latin threesome, and I caught one of the guys cheating there, too. What a laugh. He kept on dropping and moving balls around, and when he saw that I was watching him, he just looked at me and smiled and said, "Winter rules." To which I said, "If I remember my geography correctly, the last time you guys had snow was about 15 million years ago." And the other guy, I didn't actually catch cheating, but I'm sure he was, since his final score was about 5 strokes lower than it had any right to be. For you golfers out there, you know the type. He was the kind of guy who would disappear for like 15, 20 minutes and reappear ahead of you somewhere. You know, hacking away and playing in and out of the rough all the time. Anyway, I could go on and on about these so-called unsportsmanlike activities, but bottom line, I'm not telling you you shouldn't join. They're beautiful courses down here. And by first world standards, extremely cheap. Unless you're on the gringo tourist trail, of course. Surprisingly enough, a great number of them are designed by the top designers in the world. Now remember, country clubs down here really separate the Latin classes. The middle classes, even the upper middle classes, could never come up with the fee to join. Meaning, you're never going to find an average Joe, a good old boy, waiting around the clubhouse to pick up a foursome. Because, you see, the average guy at a country club in Latin America has generally got a couple of bodyguards waiting for him in the parking lot. So if you can overlook all that BS and suspend your ethics a bit, well, then go ahead and join the club. Or if you just like whacking the ball, join the club. But don't, please don't take these guys seriously. Now, don't think that I'm saying that every one of these guys cheats, because there are some that don't, I'm sure. Just like out there somewhere, there are a few honest used car salesmen, and there's someone out there who thinks O.J. didn't do it. And I'm sure there's a parent or two out there who'd let Bill Cosby babysit their 15-year-old daughter. Now, as far as golf goes, you know in almost every friendly match, there's some betting going on. Now, you might be only betting a buck a hole or whatever, but still, remember, if you do it with these guys, they're going to cheat. So what are you going to do when you catch these guys red-handed and it involves you losing some money? Even if it's just small change, it's an insult. If there's one thing that's totally against the golfer's rule of etiquette is never call someone a cheat to his face. And worse, if there's bystanders around, most likely those will be fighting words. Now kids, they're more honest and will sometimes call someone a cheat to his face, but adults, they usually bite their tongue. And don't think you'll get around it by not betting. In golf, if you don't join in when everyone else is betting, that's kind of an unfriendly, standoffish sign too. So it's that rock and the hard place thing again. That said, what about the big tournaments down here in Latin America? You pick up any Sunday or Monday newspaper and you're going to see a section on golf and all the tournaments they have. Oh, and by the way, for all you golfers, if you come down here, you never have to pack away your clubs for the winter because there is no off-season. And note the fact that it's only the rich, the famous, and the hoi polloi that can afford golf memberships, and you've got a season that's all year round. The newspapers give it a lot of press coverage. In some cases, way too much. But they do it because it's kind of like the newspaper's society pages for men. Since those winners inevitably come from families who are high society movers and shakers. So then you might be thinking, well, if all these guys are cheating, what's happening with those tournaments you see being won and lost in the press all the time? Well, I don't know about that, but I wouldn't enter a golf tournament down here if they told me I was going to win even before we teed off. Which, come to think of it, is probably how a lot of these tournaments work. Kind of like how the beauty contests work down here too. You note how almost none of the big beauty contest winners are coming from poor families. How's that happen? Just note that on the international golfing scene, you know, the big PGA tournaments and stuff, isn't it funny how you see almost zero Latin Americans qualifying? Now, I'm not talking about the Espinosas or the Lee Trevinos. Those are second and third generation Latins in the United States who were born there, so they are U.S. citizens. I'm talking about Latins who qualify for the big PGA tournaments who were born and raised in Latin countries. They're as rare as Chinese quarterbacks. Anyway, I thought I'd give all you golfers out there a little heads up on that, because when you do come down here, lugging those clubs all the way down from Cleveland, chances are you're going to want to hit the links. And by the way, if you take just a few too many mulligans and you like to cheat just a smidge yourself, you'll fit right in. You might even make the sports pages. Okay, now changing gears just a little bit. A few shows ago, I was talking about earthquakes down here in Latin America. They're kind of like hurricanes and tornadoes up north. You certainly don't like them, and though they don't come often, you do get somewhat used to them and know how to handle them when they do happen. That said, I'd like to give you a little bit of very good advice when you buy a house, build one, buy a business, or build one, whatever. Personally, me and a lot of long-term expats have learned the hard way. It's a certainty that sooner or later, one or more of your water pipes are going to spring a leak, and it could be a huge trauma or some small little inconvenience. Largely depending on one very important thing. If you or someone else took detailed photos of the construction process along the way. Specifically, photos of when they were laying the water pipes. Do note that water leaks will happen even if you have the best of plumbers. Even though, from what I've seen, about 80% of the plumbers skip steps and don't use the recommended technique for joining pipes, which does contribute quite a bit to all the plumbing problems they have in buildings everywhere down here in Latin America. Note, you're bound to have some problems some years down the line. That said, even the best of plumbers can't eliminate a water leak or a crack in a pipe that comes as a result of a lot of small earthquakes. And note, down here in most of Latin America, you get a handful of small earthquakes every year. Never enough to send you running out into the streets, but sometimes enough to rattle your plates and your windows. So then, what do you think it's doing to the plastic pipes that are embedded in concrete or are running alongside your house a few feet underground? Well, I can tell you this. If you have a leak in a pipe outside due to vibration from a lot of little earthquakes, you'll eventually be able to spot a moist patch of dirt in the yard. But the problem is, a lot of times a pipe just doesn't break. It develops a little crack at a joint, and it seeps, maybe for days, weeks, or months. And all the time, your meter's running. Now, that can be one of the biggest headaches in the world, because if you call a plumber in, if he sees the meter is running, but quite slowly, even though all faucets and toilets in the house are shut off. Note, if the leak is small and your pipes are buried quite deep in the yard, there may never be percolation of water to the surface, and you'll be pulling your hair out to figure out what to do. And the plumber will just tell you to play the waiting game until you do notice some moisture somewhere. Now, of course, there are some tricks and some special plumbing tools to find leaks. Using compressed air, sound, and moisture sensors, etc. Now, that stuff can work in the dry season. During the rainy season, which lasts a half a year, sometimes it rains every day for weeks, sometimes months. So, your whole yard's going to be a bit moist. Then how are you going to find a percolating leak? That's why it's so valuable to have a nice set of photos when the pipes were originally laid, so that you can show them to a plumber if there is a leak. Then, even if it's a slow leak and there's no sign of moisture, many times he'll be able to spot the place that's the most likely culprit. It's usually where there's a T or a union or a bend in the pipe. How are you going to know that without a photo? And by the way, suppose you do see a wet spot in the dirt in your backyard somewhere. How do you know the pipe isn't 3, 4, or 5 foot away from that leak? Because water does not travel in straight lines. It'll find the path of least resistance. And that's what makes finding a leaky pipe in concrete so difficult to diagnose. Not to beat a dead horse here. If you do spring a leak, a small one, unless it's a big one, and it shows up right away, what are you going to do when you get that big water bill and the plumber comes out and says, "Well, I just can't find it right now"? We'll just have to wait and see. I mean, let's face it, you're not going to have someone dig a trench all around your house until, hopefully, you see a wet spot. What most Latin people will do is turn off the water main every time they go out, indefinitely. And they'll turn it off right before they go to sleep every night. Because if they don't, it's going to cost some real money. And what can even be more of a problem is if you have a break in a pipe in a concrete wall. Because remember, all good construction down here in Latin America is concrete block construction, which of course means all your plumbing tubes are running in concrete and through concrete block. So you better have photos of those tubes before they put the final concrete or plaster top coat on, so you know where all that stuff is. Even if you have no trouble with earthquakes at all, someday you're going to be putting up a shelf or a dartboard and you're going to puncture one of those tubes and now you've got one hell of a mess. But if you have photos, you can check them ahead of time and make sure you don't drive a nail through one. But unfortunately, alas, it seems only gringos and expats take photos of that stuff. In fact, I've never once seen a contractor or architect do it on his own. If it's your construction job, you're the one who's got to give the order, or better yet, you come down on the days when they're laying those pipes and you take your own photos. Which brings us to buying and renting existing properties. Well, I can tell you, 99% of the time, they'll have no photos. So when you do have a leak and you're going to get them, believe me, if you're renting, at least it's the landlord that's responsible, not you. But since down here in Latin America, as in many big cities up in the States, landlords are not known to be very responsive when they get calls like that. Sometimes you'll have to shag them down yourself to even get a reply. So bottom line, you're gonna have water leaks. It's 100% certainty. And that's why even if you believe your plumbing is in very good condition, and it might be, if you leave your house or business for more than a day at a time, I suggest you close the main water valve. I know it sounds like overkill, but it is a wise thing to do. In fact, one very anal gringo I know installed a water shut-off solenoid at his main so he just flips the switch in the kitchen and it's off. Now, because water leaks are such a nuisance and a problem down here, I've taken an unofficial poll among gringos who I know have built their own houses. I don't mean they actually built them themselves, but they hired someone, a contractor or an architect, to do it. And as it turns out, aside from your normal wear and tear and the occasional little leak or drip you get from your sink faucet, or your toilet flapper valve, when it comes to leaks that have to be attended to immediately, where you have to call in a plumber, let's say, it seems as if the average gringo who thought he'd built himself a first-world style home has a good-sized leak about every year and a half. And note, for all you do-it-yourselfer guys out there, unless you've got the fortitude to pound away at a concrete wall for a couple hours, I'd call in a plumber or a handyman first, unless you don't mind getting carpal tunnel. Now, you might pride yourself in being a do-it-yourselfer, but look, why screw around when guys down here make 15 or 20 bucks a day?
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.